We're holding on page 76 in Chagiga, Ois Tes Zayin. So the Mishnayos here in the middle of this perek are talking about the more of the dinim of the Korban Chagiga and the other korbanos that you have to bring on Yom Tov. Now, we know that you always have 7 days to bring the Yom Tov korbanos. When it comes to Pesach and Sukkos, actually have eight because you have Shmini Atzeres as well. You have machloikas bis shama bis hillel, whether you can bring them on Yom Tov. And the Gemara analyzes the machloikas. Are they arguing specifically about the olus because you can't eat them? Are they arguing about the shlomim as well? Anyway, on the other hand, so with Pesach and Sukkos, you have chalamoyed that you can bring it according to everybody. But Shavuos, of course, doesn't have a chalamoyed, and in Eretz Yisrael, it's only the one day. So the Mishnah says, Atzeres shechal liyas be'erev Shabbos, if Shavuos comes out on Friday, b'shamayim yom tvoyach achar Shabbos. So b'shamay says, the day when they're going to shecht and bring the korbanos, the olas re'iyah and the shamay chagiga, is going to be after Shabbos on Sunday, because b'shamay holds you can't bring them on Friday since it's Yom Tov, and they hold you can't bring them on Yom Tov. You certainly can't bring them on Shabbos, even Beis Hillel agrees to that. You can't bring personal korbanos on Shabbos. So therefore, b'shamay says you have to push it off to Sunday. Or Beis Hillel says that's not necessary. You can bring them on Friday itself, which is Yom Tov. Now they do both agree. If Shavuos itself comes out on Shabbos, Shiyom Tvoyach Achar Shabbos, that then the Yom Tvoyach is not going to be on Shabbos, which is Yom Tov itself, because again, even Beis Hillel agrees that you can't bring personal korbanos, your Olas Re'iyah, and your Shamay Chagiga on Shabbos. So therefore, they would agree that then it's on Sunday. And when that happens, continues the Mishnah, Ein Kohen Gadol Mislabish B'Kelav, the Kohen Gadol will not wear his special clothes. On Sunday when Shavuos was on Shabbos. So Rashi says what it means is we don't mean the eight clothes of his big de kahuna. What it means is, in other words, normally on a Yom Tov, when the Kohen Gadol is not doing the Avodah, he's going to wear Yom Tov Dikah clothes. But now he should make a point of not wearing Yom Tov Dikah clothes on that day, on Sunday, Isru Chag, for reasons that the mission is going to continue, Umatonin Behesped of a Tainus. And on such a day, you're allowed to make a spadim, and you're allowed to fast, even though normally the day after Yom Tov, even though Isru Chag, normally you're not allowed to, Shalai Lakaim as Divra Oim, Matzera Sachar Shabbos, in order that doesn't look like we're upholding the Tzedukim and by Tosim who claim that Shavuos is always on Sunday. So Mela, when Shavuos is on another day of the week, no problem. But when Shavuos is on Shabbos, and you're going to have the Yom Tivayach on Sunday, and normally, after all, it is Isru Chag, and it's the day when everybody's bringing Korbanos, so people would still be wearing Yom Tov clothes, especially the Kohen Gadol, would be wearing Yom Tov Dikah clothing, and we wouldn't allow Hesped and Tainus, but here we do, in order to show that the Baitosim are wrong, and that day is not, in fact, Shavuos. Tosfos actually disagrees with Rashi and says we're not talking about the Kohen Gadol wearing nice Yom Tov Dikah clothing. We're talking about the Big Dei Kahuna. What it means is, now in principle, the Kohen Gadol can do the Avodah whenever he wants. Practically speaking, he would, aside from the fact that he has to do it on Yom Kippur, aside from that, typically the Kohen Gadol would do the Avodah on Yom Tov. So now we're saying, even though this is Yom Tivayach, nevertheless, that particular day, the Kohen Gadol should not wear his eight big de kahuna to do the Avodah, because again, then people are going to think that it's the Yom Tov, and people are going to think that the Baitusim are right, and that day is supposed to be Shavuos. So the Gemara says, Uriminu, so you're telling me then that there's no Yom Tivayach in that case, when Shavuos, or there is, you're telling me that Beis Hillel is saying that that when Shavuos is in the middle of the week or any other day except for Shabbos, then you don't have a Yom Tivayach after Shavuos because you can bring the Korbanos on Shavuos itself. But the Gemara says, Raminu, Maiso Mes Alexandroi or Alexa Balud. It happened that Alexandroi, or the Girsa in the printed Gemara is Alexa, passed away in Lud. Who this Alexa or Alexandroi was, we'll talk about in a minute. One thing we know for sure, it's definitely not Google's Alexa. Uvo Ko Yisrael L'Soifdei. Everybody came, all the Jewish people came to make a hesped for him. V'lohi Nichan Reb Tarfon. Reb Tarfon would not allow them to make a hesped, Mepneshi Yomtev Shalatzeres Hoya, because it was Shavuot. So the Gemara says, Yom Tov, Sakhadayadach, what do you mean? It was actually Yom Tov. E Yom Tov, Inuk Mika also. If it was Yom Tov, why would they be coming? They know in the first place you can't make a hesped on Yom Tov. And Bechlal, if a person passes away on Yom Tov, you can't even have Jews involved in burying him. It has to be that Goyim do the burial. So why would they even be gathering together in the first place for a hesped? So obviously we have to be talking about Ela Eme Yom Tvoyachoya. So we have to say it wasn't actually Shavuos, it was Yom Tvoyach. And yet the Mishnah is saying that when Yom Tvoyach is on Sunday, then in fact you are allowed in Hesped V'tainis. So why is Reb Taufan preventing them from doing that? And the answer is exactly that. Like Kasha, can be Yom Tov Shechalias B'Shabbos, can be Yom Tov Shechalias Achara Shabbos. It depends whether Yom Tov, the Mishnah is talking about where Shavuos comes out on Shabbos. The story with Alexa, with his hesped, was Shavuos was on a different day of the week. So Yom Tvoyach is not going to be on Sunday anyway. It's going to be some other day of the week. There's no problem that we have to forestall what the Baitusim are going to think, because then it's anyway a different day of the week. So therefore, yes, then we're going to have the usual rule that on Yom Tvoyach, that on the day we're bringing Korbanos, and anyway it's Isru Chag, we're not going to be making a spadim, and that is why Reb Taufan prevented them from doing it. There's a number of interesting things over here. The Tosfos Rid gives an explanation. First of all, this story happened after the Churban. Reb Taufan lived through the Churban, but the story, Mefarshim explain, happened after the Churban. So in that case, there's no korbanos being brought anyway, whether on Shavuos or on the day after it. Nevertheless, the takana of the Chachamim still stayed intact. The vote would be then, the people thought that maybe in that case, we should make a hesped for him, because this Alexa was evidently an important person. And Reb Taufan is telling them that no, the takana still stays. Now, the Tosfos Rid gives an explanation, even though, of course, as usual, the halacha would be like this Hillel. Nevertheless, practically speaking, because Shavuos is only one day, in practice, many people would end up bringing their korbanos the day after Shavuos. So even if there's not required, according to Beis Hillel, to be a Yom Tvoyach, on Isru Chag, nevertheless, practically speaking, there would be. There's a number of sichas where the Rebbe addresses this whole matter of Yom Tvoyach and this little piece of Gemara over here, and discusses several angles on it. First of all, the Alter Rebbe explains in his Shulchan Aruch that even though technically the halacha is like Beis Hillel, nevertheless, most Jews and even Beis Hillel themselves, most members of Beis Hillel and most Jews along with them, ended up following Beis Shammai in that and not bringing their korbanos on Yom Tov. And so the Rebbe goes in detail in that sicha where exactly did Alter Rebbe get it from, and he explains that he gets it from a story in Masechta Beitza. Anyway, so the point would be then, so it's not like the Tosfos Rid is saying that they couldn't bring them on Yom Tov because there wasn't enough time, and therefore they're bringing it the next day. To begin with, most people would bring them the day after, and therefore, in practice, that day would be Yom Tovayach, which is why now, even after the Churban, Reb Taufan is telling them not to make the Hesped, even though this Alexa was a very important person. So the Rebbe goes further in various sichas and discusses the deeper idea behind it. What's the importance of this point that they would have Yom Tvoyach after Shavuos? One point is, in other words, that since we know that Shavuos, we have to be especially happy to show, unlike with other Yom Tov, when we have Macholikus, whether it's Kulei Lavaya or Kulei Lachem, Shavuos, everybody agrees, Hakol Moedim Ba'atzeres to be in a Nami Lachem, that on Shavuos you have to have a Suda, you have to have Simchas Yom Tov with a Suda, because we have to show that we're happy to have received the Torah. So therefore, to that extent, they would show that happiness by continuing it into the following day and making a Yom Tovoyach after Shavuos, even though they weren't necessarily required to Alpi Halacha. This is also the idea why we have Yomei Tashlumin after Shavuos is based on that. And then there were different other points that the Rebbe makes in various sichas on this topic. One thing is the Gemara also mentions in Shabbos, I think, that another reason why it's called Yom Tovoyach is because there's a spirit, there's like a Yetzer Hara Dika spirit, a spirit of Truma that was around at the time of Matan Torah, where if the Jewish people hadn't accepted the Torah, then it would have been Teveach, it would have Chas V'Shalom Shechted, and caused that the Jewish people, well, that would have been the end of them. So now instead that we did accept the Torah, then Fakir, Yom Tvoyach become the day when we Shech that Yetzer Hara, and therefore that's a day of greater Simcha, and therefore again no Hespedim on that day. As far as who this Alexa was, there is an interesting idea that some historians want to say. There's a story that Josephus tells in his histories. Megillas Tainus tells the story where a little differently. Megillas Tainus tells it about Yanai HaMelech. Josephus tells it about Hordus. Anyway, the gist of the story was that there were people that the gist of the story is that whichever king it was, King Yanai or Hordus, as the case may be, was very cruel to the Jewish people throughout his reign. And before he passed away, he figures he knows that he knows everybody's going to be happy when he dies. So he has important people arrested with instructions given to the jailers that as soon as they hear that he dies, they should execute all these people. And that way, instead of them being happy that the cruel king has died, they're all going to be sad that their relatives and chachamim and whatever have been killed. Anyway, Josephus goes on to tell the story that a sister or a daughter, I don't remember which it was, of Hurdus, and her husband, whose name was Alexa, went and countermanded what Hurdus had ordered. As soon as he died, they took off his, before everybody else was informed, they took off his ring, sent it to the jailers with instructions that Hurdus change his mind, and said that everybody should be released, and only afterwards they publicized that he was dead. So that way all these people were saved. So some people want to say that was the Alexa of the story, and then you can understand why everybody's gathering to make a hesped for him. He had done a tremendous, amazing thing for the Jewish people. On the other hand, Toldos Tanoim Amoraim says it really doesn't work out chronologically. Hurdus died about 70 years before the Churban. You know, the story happened after the Churban. You'd really have to have that this Alexa lived a very, very an unusually long life in order for that to work out. So it's not necessarily so likely. But it's who knows? Maybe it's possible. Okay. The last part of the Masechta switches gears from talking about the Korbanos of Yom Tov and starts talking about certain dinim that apply during the Shalosh Regalim that don't apply during the rest of the year in terms of Tumah V'Tahara. The basic idea is we know that throughout the year the Chachamim declared that Amei Oretz Abcheskas Tumah, because your typical Amei Oretz, as much as he tries to keep mitzvahs, as much as he knows how to, but he's not familiar with all the ins and outs of Tumah V'Tahara, and he may even be careless. He may be careless with some parts of it, and therefore the Chachamim declared him to be Tomei, to be on the safe side. On the other hand, as we're going to learn later on, when it comes to Sholosh Regalim, then the Chachamim waived a number of those rules and said that everybody is considered Tahor. So the end of the second Perek and most of the third Perek, and the Gemara on it deals with the details of those halachas. So in that connection, the Gemara mentions the point that you have to, when you have something that's supposed to stay tahor, you have to have your mind on it constantly. You can't have hesach hadas, and if you do, then we consider it tamei misafik, because something tamei may have touched it, something or someone tamei may have touched it, and you don't realize. And the Gemara discusses that you may even have a situation where you have, for example, let's say you have a basket with a fork inside, with a fork or some kind of tool, or some kind of utensil like that inside the basket, and conceivably you could have that you're thinking about the basket and not thinking about the tool, and therefore the basket remains tahor and the tool, the utensil becomes tameh, or different scenarios like that. So the Gemara gives an example. A certain woman once came with a shayla to Rabbi Shmuel. She says, Rebbe, beged ze aragtiv betara. I wove this garment betara. Now, the din is that cloth is not makabel tuma until you have at least 3x3 tfachim of it woven. So she's saying, when I put those threads on the loom, I didn't have to be careful that I'm tahor yet. But afterwards, by the time I got to the point that I've woven at least 3x3 etzbois, I made sure that I was tahor and that nobody tome was involved in that nobody tome was involved in weaving it. I didn't actually have in mind to guard it from Tuma, but I know for a fact I'm the only one who was involved with weaving this cloth, and therefore doesn't that mean that it's Tahar? So obviously this is a woman who's careful in the dinim of Tuma Vatara, but she wants to know, is it in fact considered Tahar or maybe not? So Rabbi Shmuel started interrogating her and asking her all kinds of questions to ferret out the details. Omrelay, at one point, she tells him, Rebbe, nida moshcha imi bechevel. Actually, at one point during the weaving process, a nida pulled the rope with me, meaning you have a rope that's wound around. You have a loom where you weave cloth as part of the setup of a loom is you have two heavy rollers. One of them, the chassis threads are wound around them and you spool them out as you're weaving the cloth, and the other one you wind the finished cloth on it. So now you have those rollers are fairly heavy, and sometimes therefore you have a rope attached to them to be able to turn them. So now she says, so a nida helped pull the rope to turn that roller. Now, the problem with that is, therefore, the nida was not actually involved in weaving the cloth. Nevertheless, though, you have a nida and other tmeim like her are mekama with a special kind of tumah called tumas heset, meaning that if they cause something to move, even if they didn't touch it directly, then it becomes tamei. So in this case, by causing the roller to move and therefore causing the cloth to move, the result is that the cloth becomes tamei, even though the nida didn't actually touch the cloth. So therefore, so the cloth is tame after all. So yeah, if she had been shoma b'tahara, then she would have had in mind that kind of thing. Like this, she thought all she needs to do is to make sure that she herself is tame. It didn't occur to her this kind of thing. So Rabbi Shmuel says, look at that. How great are the words of the Chachamim. Where the Chachamim tell us the rule that if he has in mind to watch it, then it's Tahar. And if he doesn't have in mind, then it's Tameh. Because here you see on the face of it, she was saying, how could it possibly be Tameh? And it turns out that after all it was. So we see that we have to always, when the Chachamim say, when the Chachamim tell us a rule, then we should know, even if we don't always understand the reason for the rule, nevertheless, that's how it is. And you can sometimes you can even have a chance to see how it actually works out. Habboina also points out there's a lesson for it in general in Avoida that a person has to not only be careful with his actions, he has to be careful with his thoughts as well to make sure that he's always keeping an eye on his actions and making sure that nothing goes wrong. Because here you have something that she didn't even realize would be a problem, and it turned out that it was. And the Gemara goes on to tell another similar story to that of another woman who came with a shayla, where again the same thing. She didn't think that there could be any possibility that the thing became tame, and yet it turns out that unexpectedly it was. The next perek, Choyma Bakodesh Perek Shlishi. So most of the following perek continues with these dinim of Tumah V'Tahara. A lot of the perek focuses on the differences in halacha between things that are used for kodesh, meaning korbanos, versus truma. So you can have midrabanan, you can have, for example, a keli, which is perfectly tahor, and you had in mind to tovel it and to make it tahor for truma, and nevertheless, it's still considered tameh as far as kodshim. You can't use it for kodshim unless you specially tovel it, having in mind that it's going to be used for kodshim. And you have a bunch of other rules that apply to midrabanan, you have a bunch of other rules that apply midrabanan to kodshim, but not to truma. So most of the perek deals with details of those dinim. So in the course of it, the Gemara says, so now it also mentions a din. Again, you have during the Shalosh Regalim, we trust Amei Aretz on their Tahara. And we'll talk about later on why that is. There's a couple of reasons that are given for that. But you also have a din that if an Amei Aretz comes even during the rest of the year. Now, if an Amei Aretz comes to us during the pressing season and says that I have this barrel of wine, which I made sure is tahor, and therefore you Kohen can drink the truma from it, then fine, we can believe him only during the time when wine is being manufactured. But during the whole year, if he comes and says, I have this wine, I made sure to keep it tahor, and I want to use it for nisachim, on the Mizbeach, then we can believe him the whole year. So Tanya, Omer Rabbi Yosi, Mipnei Ma HaKol Ne'emonim Al Taras Yain V'Shemen Kol Yomei Shoshana. Why do we trust everybody, even Amei Aretz, about the Tahara of wine for Nesachim and oil for Menachos the whole year round? So Rabbi Yosi says, Kadesh Shalo Yehei Kol Echad V'Echad, because you want to make sure, in other words, we don't want to completely exclude the Amei Aretz from participating in Jewish life and participating in korbanos. You don't want that every year he's going to go and build himself a bummer. They had a big problem with that during the time of the first Beis Hamikdash, where even though the Beis Hamikdash was standing and they weren't allowed to bring korbanos everywhere else, nevertheless, we find throughout Sefer Melachim, people kept on bringing korbanos on private mizbechas. So now the Chachamim had to make a takana to make sure that you don't want to have the same thing happen again. So if you tell the Amei Aretz, sorry, we can't accept your wine or oil, then he's going to say, well, you know what, then in that case, then I'll still start my own private mizbeach, my own private Beis Hamikdash. I don't need to deal with you guys. We don't want that. The sort of parah drumal atzmai. Similarly, by the same token, we trust Amei Aretz when it comes to things involving the parah drumah. If he comes and says, for example, that here I have a keli which I want to use for parah drumah water, and I can certify, I can tell you that I made sure to keep it tahor, then we can trust him for the same reason, because we don't want that people are going to go start making their own parah drumah. So the Gemara mentions Omer HaPapa, Keman Mekablin and Ha'idna Sadusa Me'am Aretz. Who do we follow? Now the Gemara mentions that this is a machlokas. Rabbi Yosi says this way, the Chachamim disagree on certain aspects of this. So HaPapa points out, Keman Mekablin and Ha'idna Sadusa Me'am Aretz. Whom do we follow nowadays when we accept Edus from Amei Aretz? As opposed to this Gemara in Psachim that says that we don't, Keman k'Rabbi Yosi, that would be specifically like Rabbi Yosi. The Gemara establishes that Rabbi Yosi is concerned about the problem of Eva. Usually we talk about Eva in connection with relations between Jews and Goyim, but here we're talking about among Jews themselves. You don't want Eva between the Prushim, the people who are careful with details of mitzvahs, and the Amei Oretz, and therefore the Chachamim found it necessary to be makel on certain details. Which we learn from that. Akosef points out that in general, that it means that a Manig Yisrael has to figure out, has to evaluate very carefully on where do we have room to be makel in order to make achdus between Jewish people and where not. Obviously, we can't just throw out Dinim of Torah for the sake of achdus, but on the other hand, we can have certain cases where there are chumras that we can set aside for the sake of achdus, and this is an example of that. Tosfos actually points out that not necessarily would the Chachamim even disagree. First, Tosfos actually says that since we hold like, since the Gemara is implying that we hold like Rabbi Yosi, then here's another nafkamina of it as well. The Gemara tells us in Brochas that you can't have an Amah Oretz be a member of a Mezuman. But nowadays we do. We have no problem having Amah Oretz or people who are not yet, who are still working on Torah and becoming close to Torah and mitzvahs and joining them in a mezuman. So Tosfos points out same thing, same way as we're saying that we can accept their edus, we can also join them in a mezuman. Tosfos also points out, after all, who would it be who would not want to do that, who would not want to have an Amah Oretz join his mezuman, would be a Tamar Chacham. Well, we shouldn't hold ourselves that we're of the caliber of Tamar Chacham and like that to be able to say, I'm too great to have an Amah Oretz joining me. So you have that as well. With that said, there are Rishonim, by the way, who disagree with Rashi and say the Gemara doesn't mean that the Chachamim would necessarily disagree and say that you can't accept testimony from an Amah Oretz. The Gemara is mentioning Rabbi Yosi because he's the one who makes this point, but maybe in that particular detail the Chachamim would agree. And furthermore, Rishonim say there may be different levels of Amah Oretz in that regard. The Gemara in Psachim, when it says there's a Gemara in Psachim on Daf Mem Tes that talk about a whole bunch of negative things against Amah Oretz, and one of the things it mentions over there is you can't accept Eidos from them, that may be more that kind of Amah Oretz who are actually hostile to the Chachamim, of the kind that we find in that Gemara over there, for example, where Rabbi Akiva says, when I was an Amah Oretz, I used to say, if only I had a Talmid Chacham and I would bite him like a donkey. As opposed to the general run of Amei Oretz, they're not hostile to the Chachamim, they don't know better. So to begin with, they may not be the ones who are included in that din of not accepting Eidos from them in the first place. In any case, though, the point is that we do. We have them part of a mezuman, we accept Eidos from them, and so on and so forth, because, again, we don't want that people are going to start their own streams of Yiddishkeit or something, chas v'shalom. Okay. Further in connection with all these dinim of Tumah v'Tahara, the Gemara mentions a machlokas b'shamay b'shilul on the following topic. Now, we know that there are things that you're able to tovel in a mikveh and make them, and if they become tamei mess, you're able to sprinkle them with part adrum of water and they become tahor. And then you have things which you can't. In particular, we know foods, you can't make tahor in a mikveh with the exception of water, you can do ashaka. And as far as kalim, you can't tovel earthenware kalim. The only thing that you can do if they're tamei is break them or use them when you're tamei. So the Gemara discusses a point that, given that most of the time we consider that Amei Oretz and anything that they own is Tomei because of the Sofet, because they don't know how to keep the dinim properly, then therefore, so you would have, so B'Shamai says, what we would say is we would say that anything from an Amei Oretz, anything that you would want to borrow from an Amei Oretz is B'Chezkas Tomei, with the exception of food and Klei Cheres. And the Gemara discusses in that connection, you can even have, therefore, that now you also have a rule that a keli that's tomei cannot prevent tuma from spreading from one place to another. So say, for example, you have examples in the Mishnayos Ahalos, where you have, say, for example, a two-story house, and you have a skylight or a hatch to go up from the ground floor to the second floor. You'll have a ladder over there, and you'll go up through a hole in the ceiling. So suppose that hole is blocked with something that's not makabel truma, then if there's something that, then if truma, like a kazayis of a mess or whatever, is brought in to the downstairs, then anything upstairs will remain tummy. But if you have what's blocking the hole, what's blocking the hatch, is something that's makabel truma, then the truma is going to spread to upstairs as well. So the Gemara says, Tanya, Omer Rabbi Yeshua. So Rabbi Yeshua says in the discussion with Beis Shammai about the details of this din, he says, Boishni mi divreichem Beis Shammai. I'm embarrassed at your words, Beis Shammai. How could you possibly say what you're saying? Efshu isha losha v'chola. He says, imagine like this. So you're telling me that we don't consider the that we don't consider the clay cheres that belong to an amoret to be tummy. But we do consider anything else that we get from an amoret to be tummy. So imagine, for example, that we have, says Rabbi Yeshua, imagine that you have a two-story house like that, and you have a clay cheres that belongs to an amoret blocking the skylight. Now what happens is upstairs you have, for example, a woman kneading dough over there. You're going to tell me that the tray that she's kneading the dough in is going to become tameh, and the dough itself is going to remain tahor, and she herself is going to become tameh, because we're going to say the tumah is going to travel through the hatch over there as though there wasn't anything blocking it. Because again, what's blocking it is a keli that's tameh, but you're telling me that nevertheless the tray that she's using to make the dough is going to be tahor. What's the logic? So one of the talmidim of Beis Shammai joined up to go and talk it over with Rabbi Yeshua. Omalei tells him, "Oy malacha taimes shabes Shammai. Can I tell you Beis Shammai's reason? You're saying that you're embarrassed of them, that it sounds like they're being wildly inconsistent. I'll explain it to you." Omalei amar. So Rabbi Yeshua says, "Go ahead, say." Omalei. So the Talmud starts by establishing some basic facts. Kalev shel ame oretz tomei or tahor is a keli that belongs to an ame oretz. Basically, is it by default tomei or tahor? Omalei Thomas, Rabbi Yeshua says, of course, a keli that we get from an ama oretz is b'cheskas tomei, because again, we don't know that the ama oretz was careful with the dinim of tumah v'tahara. Well, continues the Talmud, v'im ata omalei tomei, but if you tell him that his keli is tomei and it's a kli cheres which can never be toveled in a mikveh to become tahor, klum mashgiach halacha, is he going to pay any attention to you? So no. So therefore, we have no choice but to say that his clay cheres are tahor, because anyway, if we try to tell him they're tameh, he's not going to listen to us anyway, because he's going to say, "What do you want me to break my kalim? I don't think they became tameh." In fact, v'loy oid. Not only that, elashimata oimalei tameh. If you insist and you tell him, "Wait, your kalim are tameh," oimaloch, then he's going to get hostile. He's going to say, "On the contrary, shali tahor v'shachal tameh. Mine are tahor. Yours may be tameh." So therefore, Beis Shammai therefore is saying that foods and drinks and clay cheres that belong to an ama oretz are going to remain, are we're going to assume that they're tahor, because since there's no way to tovel them in a mikveh, then therefore, if we tell the ama oretz they're tamei, then he's not going to listen to us anyway, and it's just going to cause hostility between him and us. As opposed to all other kalim, we can tell the ama oretz that your wooden kalim or metal kalim or whatever are tamei, and he'll say, "Okay, fine, so I'll tovel them in the mikveh. Big deal." So the Talmud explains to Rabbi Yeshua that's the reason behind Beis Shammai's reason. So now you understand, he says, that when it comes to your scenario with a woman upstairs on the second floor kneading dough, why is it that some things over there are going to be tameh and some are going to be tahor? Because we have to distinguish between the klei cheres and the foods and everything else based on this logic. Miyad holach Rabbi Yeshua v'nishtashteach al kiveh Beis Shammai. So Rabbi Yeshua right away went and prostrated himself to ask Mechila on the graves of Beis Shammai. Now this had happened long after, primarily Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel operated during the times of Hillel and Shammai themselves, and a little bit afterwards. Rabbi Yeshua is already a generation or two later, because he's a Talmud of Rabbi Yechon ben Zakkai, who was one of the Talmudim of Hillel and Shammai. Actually. So by now, the original Chachamim of Beis Shammai had long since passed away. This Talmud of Beis Shammai was one of the later members of that group who was still alive and told Rabbi Yeshua, "What's going on over here?" So now Rabbi Yeshua went to ask Mechila by the Chachamim of Beis Shammai, who had long since passed away. Omar, he says, "Nanesi lachan atzmes Beis Shammai. I've spoken too much against you, nanesi meloshen ania, like I've spoken up against you inappropriately, bones of Beis Shammai. Umas strumas shalachem kach, madoch your obscure halachas." When you say something like this, where it was so obscure to understand, why should the halacha be this way? Why are you being so inconsistent as far as things that belong to an ama oretz? And it turns out there's a very clear and logical reason behind it. Mufuroshas halachas kama v'kama. How much more so the ones where it's much more clear the reason behind it, that we should respect it. Yes, the halacha is not necessarily going to be like this Shammai in most cases, but nevertheless, we still have to respect it as a legitimate opinion in Torah, and we should never say in it bosh. An expression like that, "I'm embarrassed of your words." Omru, so they said he to do tshuva for speaking wrongly against Beis Shammai. His teeth became black from all the fasts that he undertook to as extra tshuva for the way he had spoken against Beis Shammai. The Alter Rebbe brings the Sinigeres HaTshuva as an example of one of the Chachamim who did an unusual number of fasts for something that would barely be considered an Aveira at all, but they wanted, like as an extra thing, as an extra, almost like like the equivalent of a Korban Ola, to get back in Hashem's good favor, and therefore, and then similarly, you have in the various Sforim from the Mekubalim among the early Achronim, like Reishis Chachma, whatever, that talk about various fasts for various kinds of Averus and Midas Rois, which the Alter Rebbe goes on to discuss in detail over there in Perek Beis and Gimel of the Geras HaTshuva. So this is one example of that. And the sugya goes on at some length about Tumah V'Tahara, and the Gemara also mentions the point that you were able to borrow kalim from an Am Haaretz. And again, the idea is that a chover, if he's going to borrow most kalim from an Am Haaretz, he has to assume that he's Tomei and Toivel then. But again, if he's going to borrow, again, as far as clay cheres and foods, he's not going to borrow them in the first place from an Am Haaretz, because he knows if they're Tomei, there's no way to make them Tahar. And he doesn't want to get involved with that. But on the other hand, we can't tell the Am Haaretz they are Tomei, because again, like we said, he's going to react badly. And therefore, so that's why, so the halacha ends up being like that. In fact, Rabbi Yeshua in his times was the representative of Beis Hillel. Therefore, this is one of the things, once we're saying over here that Rabbi Yeshua accepted Beis Shammai Svara, this is one of the things mentioned in Mishnayos Adius. This is one of those cases where Beis Hillel ended up abandoning their opinion and accepting that of Beis Shammai. And therefore, the halacha is like Beis Shammai. And that's how it is over here. So this is one of those cases where the halacha is like Beis Shammai, because Beis Hillel, in the person of Rabbi Yeshua, ended up conceding to them. By the way, as far as the Yom Tvoyach before, where, as we said before, the Alter Rebbe explains that that even though technically the halacha, as far as Yom Tvoyach, is like Beis Hillel, in practice most people, even most of Beis Hillel themselves, follow Beis Shammai, in one of the sichas about it, the Rebbe points out that this was a me'ein of La'asid Lava. In the future, we know the halacha in general is going to be like Beis Shammai. So now we have, in connection with Shavuos, the day that the Torah was given, then we have a foretaste of that, where the halacha is, where even though technically the halacha is like Beis Hillel, nevertheless, most people follow Beis Okay. So we'll continue, and we'll finish up the sechta tomorrow, Beis Hashem. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola, Bafa Elul. We have to know that Eber talked about in one of the earliest letters before he had even assumed the Nasius. This was Pesach Sheni Tavshin Yud in 1950, a few months after the Friedrich Rebbe's Astalkos, but before he himself had accepted the Nasius, that Eber was writing in a letter. We have to know very clearly that every single pu'ula, every single action, and every single effort that we do to spread out, to do Afotzes HaMayonis, to spread out the wellsprings of Chassidus further out, that any such thing illuminates the darkness of Golos and brings much closer the coming and the revelation of Mashiach. We don't even have any words enough to describe how hard it is to be even a moment extra in Golos, and how precious it would be to have a single extra moment of Gilui Mashiach. So, in other words, that kind of thing should impel us to put in all the effort possible for Hafatzas HaMayonis, knowing that it brings Mashiach even one moment closer. All right, continuing on dinim of what happens if a fire breaks out on Shabbos. So we said the Chachamim imposed restrictions what you can save on Shabbos to prevent you from, so you don't forget altogether that it's Shabbos. So now we said that when it comes to food and dishes and things like that, you're allowed to save whatever you're going to need for the number of meals that are remaining for Shabbos. So if it breaks out Friday night before the meal, and you can save three meals worth of food in the morning too, etc. You can also announce to other people, come and save for yourselves. And everybody else can then save as much food as he would be able to eat on that Shabbos for the respective meals. Or again, he can take one big keli that contains a lot of food in it. And the people who take that food are then allowed to keep it, because at this point, the owner made it hefker. So if the person who saved the food is a Yorei Shamayim, and he wants to, and he's going to know, look, you weren't mafka this food willingly, you only did it under duress because there's a fire going on over here, so he wants to return the food to you, so that's fine. He is allowed then, so then when he returns the food, he is allowed after Shabbos to ask for payment for the effort that he put into saving it. That's not considered Schar Shabbos because technically it would have all belonged to him anyway, and it's only Midas Chassidus. The Gemara actually explains we're talking about a guy who, on the one hand, he's willing to be a Yoreh Shemayim insofar as returning the food, and but on the other hand, he does want a few bucks for it. So therefore, some Midas Chassidus would be even that would the beyond Midas Chassidus would be not to take Schar for that, even though it's technically not Schar Shabbos, because when you have even the tiniest traces of an Aveda, then a Chassid is going to stay away from any such thing. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.